So look at chapter 2, verse 1. Look what he says. My little children, these things I write to you, so that you may not sin. And if anyone sins, well, we have an advocate. You see that word, advocate? Why don't you circle that with me? We have an advocate with the Father. Who is our advocate? Jesus Christ, the righteous. And he himself is the, see that word, propitiation, circle that one, for our sins. And not for ours only, but also for the whole world. So as John shifts gears into this particular chapter, and as he moves here, it's very important that we kind of grab a hold of a couple of things. He gives us the second reason why he writes this letter, that we might not sin. Wouldn't that be awesome? Is to be able to say, I went through a whole day and I didn't sin today. Now, I don't know about you guys, but the moment my feet hit the floor, the potential is there, okay? That's for me, you know? So John is basically saying, guys, you don't have to sin. We don't have to anymore. Do you realize that? We as Christians are the only ones that literally can say, we don't have to sin if we don't want to. That's an amazing thing when you ponder that reality. So John's telling us, I don't want you to sin. And I mean, he doesn't want us to sin. Have you ever considered the fact of what sin, why John would sit down and say, hey, I don't want you to sin? Well, the reason why. Look at what's happened in our culture. Look at Las Vegas, okay? Look at it as a whole, but then look at what just happened in Las Vegas. What was the root cause of that? Sin, the sin nature. Look at how sin affects families. Look at how it breaks up homes. Look at how it destroys marriages and relationships. Look what it does to friendships. Look what it does to our society as you look at it as a whole. Look at the damaging effects of sin. Look at the broken homes, the broken lives, broken hearts, children devastated as a result of their parents even committing sin. And when you think about it, I mean, think of our own personal lives. Think about loneliness that's in our own lives, guilt, bitterness, resentment. When we get selfish, when we focus on ourselves, that sin impacts us in many ways. So no wonder John said, guys, I'm an old man. John is probably, he's the last living apostle right now. Some believe that he's in his 90s, maybe even close to 100. No wonder the guy's sitting there saying, guys, please, I've seen the damage. I don't want you to sin. You don't have to sin anymore. Now, is it possible to not sin? It's possible, right? Is it practical? Probably not. The reason why is we do have a selfish nature, don't we? In the center of our being, it's still I. What about me? What about my needs? And when we get to that place, that's what generally leads us to that place where we say, I choose to sin. So John is saying, if it's possible, then how is it possible to not do so? Well, walk in the light. As Jesus shines his light, as you and I stay close to him, he will shine his light on temptation. And think about it, it happens to us. When you or I are walking, and we're saying, I'm walking with the Lord, and all of a sudden, something enters into our brain where we say, I would like to do this. What about me? What about my needs? Well, I want to. And all of a sudden, the light shines on it and says, don't do it. Don't do it. The moment that you and I think, I don't know if I should do this or not, do you realize the light's already shining on it? The Lord's already saying, don't do it. I'm already exposing it. I'm showing you this temptation is only temptation. I'm shining my light so you don't have to sin, Rob. Make a choice to say no. Make a choice to say, I'm going to walk in the Spirit. I'm going to walk pleasing to the Lord. And if we make that choice, he'll give us the power and the ability to do what he's asked us to do. Isn't that crazy? But if we say, no, I want to serve myself. I want to do this on my own. Then you walk in that particular place. But he will shine his light. He will expose the temptation to reveal us to our sin before we do it. So in essence, we don't have to do it. It's a choice that we make, isn't it? So unfortunately, that's our problem. We drift from Jesus at times. We become selfish. We say, I want, what about me? And when we do, or you hurt me, so I'm going to hurt you back. Whatever it is, the Lord usually is saying, don't do it. And you get that little inside of you that says, I'm warning you, don't do it. You don't have to. You know, we're the only ones that have that conviction. The world doesn't have that. They just sin because that's what they want to do. And think about how you used to be. So when we do sin, and we will, what happens then? Well, let me tell you a little story then. We were over at the Barona drag strip yesterday. And so suppose for just a moment that after watching these drag cars running down the drag strip, that I am on Main Street in my minivan. And I choose to see how powerful it can really be. Okay? So in a moment of weakness, after being tempted by watching these cars go down that 8-mile track over at Barona, I decide to put my pedal to the metal and see what this minivan has got. Right? And so you hear the roar of that little 6-cylinder engine. And I go down Main Street, and I'm doing 90 miles an hour, 95 miles an hour. It's a story. So just imagine I could, okay? Just imagine that it could, okay? And suddenly, now, am I free to do that? I'm free to do it, aren't I? I can choose to do that. So I choose to do this. I say, I want to feel the power. And I put the pedal to the metal and 95 miles an hour. And all of a sudden, I look in my rearview mirror and I see lights flashing. And I realize that a law enforcement officer is pulling me over. So I try to talk my way out of my sin. I try to say, look, man, you got to understand, it's not my fault. I'm the victim of the drag strip. I saw it. I wanted to try it. It's really not my fault. And he says, no, it is your fault. You started the car. You put your pedal down. It's your fault. And so he says, so I hope you enjoyed that ride. Now here, and he hands this little thing called a ticket to me. And he says, by the way, doing 95 and a 35, that's about a $5,000 ticket, pal. And I go, oh my goodness. So I get my court appearance and the date in the mail, and I see, oh, it is $5,000. So I show up in the court on the assigned date. The bailiff calls the court to attention, and he calls my name. Rob, you may stand and approach the bench. I walk up all alone. I'm scared to death. I know it's going to be $5,000. I don't have the money. I know I'm guilty. I can't pay the fine. I'm standing there all alone. There's no way out for me because the law demands that I pay my fine or go to jail. So I stand there, and then all of a sudden, all rise, the judge comes walking in, and much to my great pleasure, I notice it's my dad. So I look at it, and I go, awesome. I look up, and I see it's my dad. The bailiff, I look over at him, and he's going, you're guilty, you loser. How dare you speed? How dare you break the law? You're guilty. You're going to pay the price. I'm going to make sure of it. You're going down, pal. And if you can't pay it, you're coming to me, baby. And as he stands there doing all that, and I look up, and it's my father. I breathe a sigh of relief, and I go, sweet, it's my dad. He's going to cut me some slack. He'll understand. I mean, I have a connection with the big guy, right? Me and the big guy have an understanding. I sin, he looks the other way, right? So dad grabs a hold of the file. He opens it up. He reads the charges. Rob, you're being charged with breaking the law. You're going 95 and a 35. How do you plead? And I say, guilty, Dad. Right? Me and you, Pop. We have an understanding. Do you realize people think that way about God? Interesting. Dad looks over at the bailiff. The bailiff is pointing to the code book saying, he broke the law, Judge. Right here it says it. Penal code says he's guilty. He needs to go to jail. He needs to pay his fine. And I look at the bailiff, and I realize it's powerless for me to do anything about this. You're going down, he sighs. I look back up at my dad, and his tears are coming down out of his face because he realizes that his son is guilty. So he, as he raises his gavel, and he says, Rob, the law says that you're guilty. The penalty is $5,000. Pay the bailiff or go to jail. And as he starts to bring it down, I say, hey, what about me? I'm your son. But my dad says, son, you're guilty. And this is a court of justice, and I am a keeper of justice. I have to uphold the law, no matter who you are. And I must be just and right. The law is the law. And as he starts, I say, yes, okay, Dad, I know that I'm guilty, but I have no ability to pay. Please help me out here. And before that gavel goes down, my dad stands up and he takes off that black robe and he sets it off to the side, steps away from the bench, walks out into the courtroom, comes up standing next to me. In fact, he takes me and puts me behind him, pulls out of his pocket and he takes the $5,000 and he puts it down on the bench for me. And he says, I will pay his penalty. I will pay it. And as the room watches and the bailiff stands and he's watching this, saying, no, this can't be true. This can't be right. My dad puts his arm around me and from the side he reaches out and he pays it and he hands it over to the bailiff and he says, his penalty is paid. He turns around, walks back up to the bench, puts on his robe of righteousness and he declares, his debt is paid in full. Set him free. I have paid the debt that he could not pay to remove that debt. Now, I begin to cry. I start to cry and I said, Dad, thank you. Thank you for your mercy. Thank you for your love for me. Thank you for doing that for me. And at that point I say, I will never speed again. I don't want to speed again because I don't want to see that look on your face ever again, Dad. I don't want you to have to do that for me ever again. So I won't speed anymore. I don't want to hurt you. I look over the bailiff and he says, I'll be watching you, you little punk. And I'll be waiting for you to make another mistake. Oh, I lose my license for 3 months because there will be a consequence. But the penalty is paid and I am set free. John doesn't want us to sin. We have options to not sin. We have the ability to not sin. The light shines on the temptation before we choose to sin. But he's written to us so that we won't sin. But then he used two words that I had you highlight. Because if we do, what happens then? What happens next? If we drift from the light, because John knows that we have a sin nature. He knows that our sin nature at times will cause us to be selfish and that we will make that choice to sin. So when we do that, when we walk away from the light of God's love and his protection, and we do sin, we have an advocate. We have an advocate. The word literally in the Greek means parakletos. That word should sound familiar to you. Para means alongside. Kletos means to comfort. So we have one who comes alongside of us to comfort. But it also comes from a legal term, and listen to what it means. It says, one who pleads another's cause before a judge, a pleader, a counsel for the defense. So who is our advocate? Did you see what it said? We read it. Our advocate with the Father, verse 1 says, Jesus Christ, notice also, the righteous. The one who will always do what is right and just. So Jesus Christ is in essence God without the robe. Because we read that God was in Christ reconciling the world to himself. So we have the Father who said, I want to go and leave the courtroom of heaven where the law demands justice. And he puts on a human body, steps out from the courtroom or out from the bench, steps into the courtroom and stands up for you and for me and says, I will be your advocate. I will represent you before a righteous and holy judge. I will step in your place. So in reality, he stepped out and paid our penalty. So Jesus is not only our attorney, he's our intercessor. He represents the cause of every believer that says, I put my faith in Jesus Christ. And he stands there for me and for you. So you see, God doesn't just look the other way with sin. Like some people say, well, hey, I have a connection with the big guy. Me and the big man upstairs, yeah, we have an understanding. No, the only understanding that he has is Jesus is the only understanding. What have we done with Jesus Christ? Is he our advocate? Have you come to that place where you have made him your advocate? So God doesn't cut deals. The only deal he cut was with Jesus because Jesus paid the ultimate price for me and for you. It's a huge deal. John wants us to get this. He came in the form of Jesus, paid our price. Jesus died in our place. So in other words, he said, Rob, I need you to stand aside. I will pay the price that you owe. And what is the price that we owe? What is the wages of sin? death. And when God spoke with Adam and Eve, he said, Adam, in the day that you eat of it, you will surely die. Now, Adam and Eve didn't, when they ate that fruit, they didn't go and die. But many things, as we've talked about before, many things died. Their relationship with God died. Their relationship with each other died. Their innocence died. Fear entered into the garden. Many things died. But physically, they didn't die. But a physical death did take place. But it wasn't Adam. It wasn't Eve. It was an advocate called a little sheep. Because God said he made tunics of skin for Adam and his wife to cover their sin. To cover them, to cover their sin, literally. So an innocent animal took the place of the guilty sinner. Ultimately, that would hold, and God would introduce that through Moses, the law, and that would hold until Jesus Christ came upon the scene, where ultimately the ultimate sacrifice would take place. Now Satan stands, and he points his finger at each one of us and says, you're guilty! And in all reality, are we? Yes, we are. In all reality, we stand there and we say, I am guilty. But then Jesus, our advocate, steps inside and he puts us behind him and he says, I have paid his price. He is forgiven. The debt has been paid. I paid it myself. So he is now free to be set free. So that should then cause you and me to say, wow, I don't want to sin any longer. So the second word that he used is called propitiation, and that's what we just described. Propitiation, it's a big name. We have a holy God. He has holy demands, and he says, the wages of sin is death. In the day you eat of it, you shall surely die. That's the cost. That's the penalty. That's the price. And you know, it doesn't matter what sin we commit. You know, we put the levels on sin. You know that. From if we steal something to murder, to adultery, to fornication, we put it on there. I mean, and Hollyweird helps us out, don't they? You know, because I mean, in Hollyweird, you watch some of their movies, and you know, as long as you're not, you know, a pimp or a drug dealer, everybody else goes to heaven, right? All the rest of the sin is on the same level. But as far as God is concerned, whether you stole something or whether you killed someone, it's all the same to God. And there's one penalty. To a righteous God, he says, the law is the law. I have given the law. Justice must be served. There is a righteous penalty that must be paid. And Jesus came and said, I will pay the price myself. I will be the one who absorbs that penalty. I'll be the propitiation. I'll pay. I will take the righteous demand that you have required and requested, and I will be that penalty. I will pay that penalty. I will be the one to take the righteous demands of God and take care of that. That's what the word propitiation means. He's the one that took our sin, paid the price, taking care of the righteous demands of the law on our behalf, the wages or the earned price of sin, death. Jesus died in our place. And now he says, I want to give that to you. And how do we get it? Believing. Faith. You put your faith in Jesus Christ, and what he has done comes to you. Now, John says, I don't want you to sin. But if you do, we have an advocate. We have someone that wants to stand in your place, and he will come and move you behind so that God looks at you and he looks at me. Did you know there's that bumper sticker we've talked about this before? Christians aren't perfect, they're just forgiven. Do you know, in reality, there's truth to that, but there's also untruth to that. Because in all reality, we are perfect in Christ. Okay, apart from him, no, you're on your own. But I encourage you, don't go bragging about that to your friends, because that, you know, then that's pride and that's sin, and then you got to get all of this thing starts all over again. But when God looks at you and looks at me, Jesus says, Rob, stand behind me. I am your advocate. I have paid. I'm the propitiation for this. I've paid the righteous demands. I've taken care of it. Now the Father looks at you and he looks at me and he sees us through Jesus, if you will, and he says, perfect, innocent. Set him free. He's free to go. How do we get that? By putting your faith and your trust in what Jesus has done. That's just crazy. It's a gift that he gives to us. Can you earn a gift? You can't earn a gift unless it's like, you know, when you, a timeshare. Right? You get this free gift. All you have to do is sit through a 2-hour presentation, you know, but this is an amazing thing. Good news. God has done for us what we could not do for ourselves. Now we are free, you know, to not put ourselves back under that bondage. In fact, what this means is I look at God and I say, I don't want to do that anymore. The motivation changes from I must obey the law to I don't want to break the law because I love my Father in heaven. I see what he's done for me. The motivation changes. That's because of our relationship with God. Through our faith in Jesus changes everything. He loves us. It's a gift. It can't be bought. It can't be earned. You just recognize, he loved me enough to do that for me? Wow. I don't want to do it anymore then. And that's the change that begins to take place that John describes next. Look what he says in verse 3. Because how do we know if we have that relationship? Now, by this we know that we know him, if we keep his commandments. He who says, well, I know him, but he doesn't keep his commandments, well, he's a liar. Now, listen, that's not me being politically incorrect. That's John, okay? And the truth is not in him. But whoever keeps his word, truly the love of God is perfected in him. By this we know that we are in him. He who says he abides in him ought himself also to walk also as he, Jesus, walked. So how do you know, how does a person know if they have a relationship with Jesus? Well, here we come into this particular place of walking our talk, a discussion on that again. How do we know if we know him? Remember that what we're dealing with here, John is dealing with the Gnostics. The Gnostic understanding, it's all about knowledge. The more knowledge you have, the more spiritual you become. The more knowledge that you have, the more righteous you become. You become perfect through knowledge. And John is saying, it's not just about knowledge. It's about a relationship. Yes, it is one thing to say, I know who Jesus is. I know the historical figure. But that won't change a person. I mean, people have written history books. And they talk about Jesus, but if they don't know him in a personal, experiential, relational way, that knowledge doesn't change anything. So John is dealing with Gnostic belief that is starting to penetrate into the church. And he's saying, you got to get past just knowing. Because some people, you ask people, are you a Christian? Of course I am. Oh, really? You know, are you a believer in Jesus? Well, of course I believe. But you see no other evidence in their life. Do you know what James said? James said, you believe that there is one God. You do well. Even the demons believe that, and they tremble. So the demons have a Gnostic understanding of who he is, but they don't have a relationship with him. So John is saying, we got to move further into that. How do we know if we're walking in the light? How do we know if we have a relationship with Jesus? Well, are you doing what he says to do? Are we obeying what he asks us? Now, again, this is not obeying or following a set of rules or rituals or regulations. That's religion. That's not, John has already experienced that in Judaism. That's not what he is talking about. John is saying, I don't need the set of rules and regulations and rituals like I needed in Judaism. I have a relationship with him because I see what he did for me, and now out of my love for him, I want to follow him. I want to do what he's asking me to do. Did it change the law? No. The law still says 35 or whatever it says up here on Main Street. But the law is still there to just expose what it is. But the motivation of my obedience, I don't go 35 on Main Street going, I hate this. I have to go 35 because that's what the law says, because people are telling me that, because the cops are all around me here. I look at it now and I say, I don't want to, because we have law enforcement guys here and I don't want them to catch me, right? And so our motivation changes instead of saying, I do it because I have to. That's legalism. That's following a set of rules. That's following a ritual. I look at it and I say, because God's changed my heart, because of my relationship with him, I don't want to do anything that would hurt him. So I do it because I don't do it because I don't want to anymore. Does that, you understand the difference? It's a huge difference when John was talking about a relationship. The word keep that he uses here is very interesting because it means to attend to carefully, to take care of. So if we look at our heart and we see that we are careful to do the things that Jesus lays out for us to do, and when we don't, our heart gets broken Because see, when he shines that light on me and he says, Rob, don't do it. And I go, but I want to. And I do it anyway. Then you know that you have a relationship because the conviction of his spirit says, oh, I've got to run to my advocate. I got to run to Jesus because I realize what I just did. I hurt him. I need him to stand. I need to ask him to forgive me. That shows that we have that kind of a relationship. That was Paul's great passion. He said in Philippians 3:10, that I may know him, the power of his resurrection, the fellowship of his sufferings, being conformed to his death. Now, in contrast to that, a person who says, I have a relationship with Jesus, they have a Gnostic view, and you say, but I hate that guy. I hate him. Well, that person cannot. That's evidence of someone who doesn't have a relationship with Jesus. Do you understand? Because if you have a relationship with Jesus, you can't hate anybody. Why? Because Jesus didn't hate. He hates sin, but he didn't hate people. And so John says, if you don't have a desire to please him, if you don't have a desire to please the Lord, then the truth isn't in you. You have a Gnostic understanding, but you don't have a relationship. And that Gnostic understanding is not going to save you. Pretty black and white. John made it pretty simple. However, when we're walking in obedience, there's unity with Jesus. Now, Jesus laid out and he says, here's my commandment. So he didn't list one rule. He didn't list one regulation. Did you know that? He said, in fact, it makes you wonder, I mean, you look at this, you go, where did John learn this cool stuff? How did he get this? How did he, as a Jew, how did he understand these things? Let me tell you where he learned it. He was sitting there watching Jesus teach. He watched Jesus, the relationship that Jesus had with people. He watched him love people that interrupted him. He watched people that came to attack him. He watched as the religious leaders came and insulted him. He watched as people he knew were hungry. And instead of sending him away, he says, let's feed these guys. John watched Jesus, and then he heard Jesus teach these words. If you love me, keep my commandments. If you love me, do what I'm telling you to do. Love and obedience then become one and the same. He heard Jesus say in John 14 also, in verse 21, he who has my commandments and keeps them, it is he who loves me. And he who loves me will be loved by my Father, and I will love him and manifest myself to him. So what was the commandment? That you love one another as I have loved you. Isn't that crazy? Jesus said, here's my commandment. You know, when they asked Jesus, what's the greatest commandment? He said, well, the first one, you love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. They said, second one's like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. Isn't that interesting? He took all of them and he said, on these two commandments hang everything else. Everything else hinges on those two things. You get that, those two things right, all the rest of the things fall into place. Isn't that cool? So when it came down to the final days when Jesus said, here's the deal, greater love is no one than this, and he laid down his life for his friend. You are my friends if you do whatever I tell you to do. What did I just tell you to do? Love people, lay your life down. So interestingly enough, the commandments that Jesus gave, he didn't say, thou shalt love your neighbor. You better do it. Because if that were the case, you would walk out of here saying, okay, Rob gave me my pep talk and I got to go love people today. So I'm going to try really, really hard. And you know what will happen? You will get in this parking lot and it will be over on your way out of the church, right? Because this isn't about doing. It's not about keeping. It's about enjoying. It's about saying, Lord, you've told me to love others as you have loved me. And that's the commandment that you've given to me. And so now, Lord, I want to go and love others like you love me. You gave me a commandment, but it's not a commandment like saying, go do it. It's a commandment that he says, watch this. And he walked out on the Garden of Gethsemane, and they said, we're looking for Jesus, the Nazarene. He said, I'm him. I surrender. When Judas came up and betrayed him with a kiss, I don't know about you guys, but I don't know how well I would have done that. You come and kissing me, you're gonna get kissed with this pal, okay? You know, I would have grabbed Peter. You know, Peter was the guy that probably represented us. Oh, kill him. And think of what Jesus then did next. He surrenders himself. He stands before the religious establishment. They ridicule him. They mock him. They put him in a dungeon. They pull him out. They hand him over to Pilate. He gets ridiculed. And all the while, He said nothing. Why? Because Jesus made a decision to love instead of win in a human sense. See, we think winning is fight, defend yourself. Could he have done that? He told Pilate, when Pilate said, don't you know that I have the power to release you and give you life and the power to put you to death? Jesus said, don't you know that I could have the power to call a legion of angels down here and wipe this whole planet out? But instead, Jesus said, I choose to love. I just told my guys, follow my commandment. Greater love is no one than this, and he laid down his life. Guys, watch. Now watch. I'm going to go do that. So, gang, you're going to get the opportunity to keep his commandment. How do you know if you have a relationship with Jesus? Are you a lover of people? Are you willing to die to yourself? Are we willing? Am I willing to lay my life down? What does that look like? Well, I could prove to my wife that I'm right. I could put her in her place. I could say, woman, I'll show you how to handle this situation. You guys tried that? How's that working out for any of you guys that are here, right? Doesn't work for me. Or you could say, I choose to win. How did Jesus win? By what we look at, and it looked like losing. He surrendered? You don't win by surrender. But that's the way the kingdom of God works. It's the exact opposite. Jesus said, I win by choosing to love, not by choosing to have battle victories. Although, yes, there are those times, but most of the time it's, are you willing to choose to love? Husbands, are you willing, when you get into those arguments with your wife, are you willing to say, you know, it's not important to me. What's important to me right now is to love you. I choose to love you instead of winning and sleeping on the couch. Wives, are you willing? See, listen, guys, you get this. If you will lead that way with your wife, she will say, well, instead of arguing with you, I want to follow your lead. Now, that's not going to happen instantaneously in the midst of a heated argument. Your wife isn't going to go, when you go, honey, what's important to me is I just want you to know I love you. She's not going to go, wow, that's so awesome. I want to follow your lead. You got to take her, let her calm down a little bit first, okay, guys? Give her that room. But then ultimately, they will say, I just want to love you. Do you guys understand? This is how Jesus won. How do you know if you have a relationship with him? If you're loving each other, willing to lay down your life for your friends, if you're willing to surrender your claim to your rights to yourself, to say, what's important to me right now is to love. You're going to find that out in the restaurant you go to when the waitress ignores you. You're going to find that out tomorrow when you go to work and somebody else gets the promotion that you deserve. You're going to find that out this afternoon when you pull out of this parking lot and somebody's standing there talking to the pastor and you're going, I need to go. How do you know if you have a relationship with him? Are you keeping his commandment? What's his commandment? Do you love others? Are you loving them? Now, here's the deal. I'm not telling you to go muster this up. This is what you and I have to do is say, Lord, put that kind of love in my heart because I don't have a selfish by nature. Lord, put that in my heart. Show me when I need to choose that, and then give me the power and the ability to do what you've asked me to do. And he will do that. Lord, thank you so much for the truths that John has brought to our attention. Lord, I thank you that you're not only our advocate, but that you're also the propitiation. You also paid the price for us. And so I pray, Lord, for my brothers and my sisters that are here today. May you, Lord, fill us with your love, fill us with your amazing grace, and fill us with that kind of a passion, God, that we are willing to lay our lives down for those that are around us. Oh, Lord, give us your power and your might to do what you've asked us to do. In Jesus' name, amen.